is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, October 18, 2019. I'm Buster Olney, and producing back in Bristol is Troy Farkas. On Thursday, the Washington Nationals, after having a day off to rest and to dry out, they had their first workout. And they're just going to be waiting here in the next few days to see who comes out of the American League Championship Series, which resumed at Yankee Stadium on Thursday. Before the game, Justin Verlander, who will start Game 5 for the Astros, was in the press conference that every day a team will provide a particular player for media to talk to. And he talked about the baseballs, no question of whether or not they've been tampered with.
Major League Baseball and Mr. Manfred are saying that they haven't done anything to the baseballs and they don't know what happened. So if that's the answer, then there's no answer to fix it, right? You know, I just think in a game that can be so different based on the ball that's in play, you know, we should definitely take some steps in normalizing it. It's such a unique sport with the history that we have, and it's been played on the same dimensions for so long. You know, you start changing with some of those things, and one of the best parts of this game goes away.
Going into Thursday's game, of course, the Astros with a 2-1 lead in the American League Championship Series, with Verlander lined up to pitch Game 5 and Gerrit Cole lined up to pitch Game 7. He addressed that.
I mean, there's nothing taken for granted in this game. No matter how good Cole's been in the second half, no matter how well I've pitched in certain situations before, each game is a new opportunity for that not to happen. No matter how confident you are rolling into a game, every playoff game is like a reset button.
Now, early on Thursday afternoon, we reported that Major League Baseball looked into the whole question of whether or not the Astros are whistling from their dugout to signal pitches to the hitters. I was told by a source that there was no evidence of cheating. A.J. Hinch, the Astros manager, really unhappy about this whole conversation.
Man, I'm glad you asked that question. And I thought it would come up today. In reality, it's a joke. You know, Major League Baseball does a lot to ensure the fairness. You know, when I get contacted about some questions about whistling, it made me laugh because it's ridiculous. To the Yankees, you know, there's nothing bad going on. Pitch tipping is a little bit of a different story. If you don't want us to know the pitch is coming, don't do something that demonstrates what pitch you're going to pitch or what you're going to throw. But they're doing the same thing.
A.J. Hinch talked about having an issue with how the media is covering the whistle controversy.
The problem that I have is when other people take shots at us outside this competition. You know, when you guys ask me this question, my face, my name is by my quotes, my opinions, my reaction is all for you guys to tweet out. And when we have people that are unnamed, or you guys have sources that are giving you information, I suggest they put their name by it if they're so passionate about it to comment about my team or my players.
He talked about Zach Greinke, Game 4 starter for Houston, and he had a funny story about building a relationship with Zach.
It's been great to have Greinke. When he got to Houston right after the deadline, we immediately embraced him and kind of introduced him to what we do and how we game plan. And, you know, it's funny, the first game that he had was against the Rockies, so we was right back into the NL West. And I was really worried about him having to pitch against a team that had so much familiarity with him. I was hoping that when we got him, part of the advantage is that a lot of teams in the American League hadn't seen a ton of him. And so I apologized to him that, man, your first start's going to have to be against the Rockies. And he said, no, it'll be okay. I'll get to see if you guys know what you're talking about.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
The game of the day was at Yankee Stadium, Game 4, and man, was it blustery. The flags were snapping in the wind. In the start of the game, Weather Service said that the miles per hour in the wind, 35 miles per hour in gust, and then an hour into the game, that was reduced to 25 miles per hour. Early on, you could see how it was carrying balls, especially when they were hit out toward right field. The Yankees rallied in the bottom of the first inning against Zach Greinke.
The kick and the pitch, 3-0, and it's outside, ball four, another close miss. The third walk of the inning, and that'll force in a run to make it 1-0 Yankees with pitching coach Brent Strom on his way to the mound.
My man Dan Shulman on ESPN Radio, who we're going to talk to here in a bit. Yeah, for Zach Greinke, three walks in the first inning. It was the first time that that had happened in a start for Greinke since 2007. But Gary Sanchez was next to the plate. He, of course, has struggled badly in this postseason.
And the 0-2 on the way, and a swing and a miss at a slider down near the dirt. Sanchez strikes out. He does hear some boos, and the inning is over.
Big booze. You heard right there. So the Yankees score one run, but they certainly missed an opportunity to score more, which is becoming a theme in this series. In the top of the third inning, George Springer came to the plate, two runners on base against Masahiro Tanaka.
The 1-0, and a swing and a fly ball, deep left field, Gardner back, it's gone! George Springer with a three-run homer, and the Astros have taken a 3-1 lead.
For George Springer, that's 13 postseason home runs. He was fired up as he rounded the bases. Houston, seeing an avenue in that moment to win game four. In the bottom of the fifth inning, the Yankees rallied again against Greinke. Ryan Pressly came on in relief.
And again, the 1-2 and a fastball swung on and missed, and Pressly gets him to end the inning as the Yankees leave the bases loaded for the second time tonight.
And you could hear in that sound, Troy, Ryan Pressly getting fired up as he left the mound. Can you play that again?
And again, the 1-2 and a fastball swung on and missed, and Pressly gets him to end the inning as the Yankees leave the bases loaded for the second time tonight.
Yeah, Troy, some pretty good sound you could hear from the field of Ryan Pressly.
Yeah, he's pretty animated there, and I can't blame him because, I mean, like, the Astros, they've just been doing this. They've been getting out of so many jams throughout this entire series. It's pretty incredible, so I totally get the energy.
Time and time and time again. Chad Green was on for the Yankees, top of the sixth inning, two runners on base. Carlos Correa at the plate.
Here's the 0-1, and a fastball is hit hard. Deep left field, it is gone! Correa with his second home run of the series. This one is a three-run shot. And it gives the Astros a 6-1 lead here in the Bronx.
Yep, a 6-1 lead. And in the bottom of the next inning, man, a lot of folks had cleared out by then because it was a cold night. And for the Yankees, a rough night on the bases. Now, Gary Sanchez did finally break through in the bottom of the sixth.
Here's the pitch. And a fastball swung on and hit to deep left center field and gone! That'll get Gary Sanchez back on the good side of these Yankee fans. A two-run homer to make it 6-3.
CeCe Sabathia came on in relief for the Yankees, and there was a really ugly moment.
And the fans here are having an appreciation moment right now, starting to chant his name. They understand this could be the last time he ever pitches in a big league ballgame. And now Steve Donohue, the trainer, is coming out to the mound along with Aaron Boone. They have seen something they don't like. And wouldn't be this be unfortunate? He's been battling a chronic knee problem for a long time if he's not able to finish. The last thing he wants to do is not be able to walk off the field having gotten the last out they wanted him to get. But he doesn't look right.
Is it the lower half? Is it the upper half? But he's motioning. He wants the catcher to go back there. He wants to throw some pitches. If, like you said, Dan, 100%. This is not the way that he wants it to end.
Donohue and Boone are still on the field as CeCe throws a pitch. And no, they're going to have to take him out. I think it's the knee again. The way that he landed, it just didn't look right. Sabathia walking off the field in what very well could be the last time we see him in a big league ballgame. And it's unfortunate, given the career that he's had, that this is the way it could end.
And when Sabathia's teammates got to the mound, he told them that his shoulder had popped on that last pitch. He wanted to try one warm-up to see if it would be okay. And when he threw the warm-up, the same pain was there, and he said, I'm done, and he walked off the mound. A really tough moment, a tough way to see CeCe Sabathia's career come to an end. The Astros win this game 8-3. And in the game, the Yankees committed four errors. Their offensive struggles continued the last three games. Six runs scored, 26 runners left on base, just 4-27 with runners in scoring position. Think about this. Before game four, DJ LeMahieu had never made two errors in a game before this pivotal playoff game. Right after the game, I talked with George Springer on the field.
George, you guys lead this series 3-1. You got Justin Verlander tomorrow night. How close does the World Series feel at this point?
We got to play our game. You know, that's a really great team over there. They can score runs with the best of them, and I don't expect them to quit at all. So, you know, just we'll play our game. We'll hand the ball to JV, and we'll see what happens.
You get the big hit early, the three-run homer. Walk us through that at bat against Tanaka.
I don't really know, you know, just honestly trying to hit the ball hard. He's so tough. He's so good. He can put the ball where he wants, and I just think I was fortunate enough to hit a mistake.
You've got 13 home runs in the postseason now. That's as many as Chipper Jones, Miguel Cabrera, Alex Rodriguez. What is it about the postseason that you love?
This is why we play the game. You know, you play the game for these moments. I mean, it's pretty cool, but I'm glad the team wins, and that, you know, but that's all I care about.
How about your pitching shutting down the Yankees the last 3 days? 4-for-27, runner in scoring position.
Extremely hard to do. You know, that's a really great offensive team. You know, they can score what the best of them can string together at bat after at bat. So, you know, hats off to our guys for now. And again, we'll see what happens.
Astros manager A.J. Hinch talked after the game about that decision to go from Zach Greinke to Ryan Pressly in the fifth inning.
Zach stopped making pitches at the same way that he was making pitches leading into that inning. And then, you know, as we know in this ballpark, when the inning starts to grow and build and momentum starts to swing in their favor, really just a fresh arm with some power behind it and a good breaking ball. And, you know, Press has been one of our guys that we've leaned on so heavily, but that was a really, really nice time of the game for him to come through big and feel back in the mix in a huge leverage spot.
Hinch talked about CC Sabathia's exit.
I hate to see that for him. I hate to see that for the sport, and we hope he's okay. And our entire dugout was on the top step, paying our respects to him trying to gut it out. I don't know what was wrong with him. I know he's been banged up, but you can see the impact that he's had on numerous players on our team and me and everybody else, that we have so much respect for him, that in the middle of a heavyweight bout of playoff baseball, we all can keep our senses about us and pay our respects to him.
After the Yankees' ugly loss, Aaron Boone called a team meeting and basically told his players, look, you are not out of it. He expounded upon that in his post-game press conference.
We played poorly tonight. There's no other way to explain it, and we need to flush this immediately, you know, because, you know, we talked about as a team, we need to get over this in a hurry and come put our best foot forward tomorrow. You know, stranger things have certainly happened, a lot stranger. We need to play a cleaner game, obviously, if we're going to beat a team like that, but we did not get it done tonight.
In Game 5 tonight, James Paxton will pitch for the Yankees. Justin Verlander will pitch for the Houston Astros. And Boone talked about his team being ready for Game 5.
Our guys are studs, and they will... I think they embrace the challenge. Obviously, we got our backs against the wall now, and we've had it there in many ways from the adverse situations we've faced all year. And I know these guys will come focused and ready to go tomorrow, and I can't wait to see them go out there and play our game.
And before we lead off with Dan Shulman, we all know that hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura COO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted a job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers that post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. That's ZipRecruiter.com/B-U-S-T-E-R. ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire. Dan Shulman is a play-by-play guy for ESPN Radio in the American League Championship Series. He'll be doing the World Series as well. And, of course, I got to work with him for many years on Sunday Night Baseball. Dan, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. Like you, got home a little late after last night's game, but it's all good. We look forward to going back to the ballpark tonight.
All right. Now, one guy that you worked with and actually called the World Series with on ESPN Radio was Aaron Boone. And I've thought about this, that, you know, in the meetings we've had with him on Sunday Night Baseball before the games, those are like the most awkward conversations I have with him, because it just seems surreal that you're in that spot, that our friend Aaron Boone is manager of the Yankees. What's that like for you?
It is a little bit strange. I will grant you that. And there are sometimes less now than, you know, maybe last year where you still have to say to yourself, you're really the manager of the New York Yankees. He's still my buddy. He's still a good friend. He's still the guy that I've always known. But now he's got this uber important job that he does. And the meetings are a little bit strange. Singy and I are in there talking to him. And usually a few minutes of it is kind of goofing around like old friends. But then we get down to business and we ask him about Stanton or we ask him about Ottavino or we ask him about his lineup or whatever the case may be. So it's becoming, you know, a little bit less strange, if you will, but it is kind of a surreal moment.
And one of the things that I think has distinguished him as a manager, 2 years in, is his sort of his level-headedness and the fact that he doesn't change from day to day. And that's why it was striking to me, you know, just being in his post-game press conference to hear him reference the fact that after that ugly loss last night with the four errors and the repeated failures with runners on base and the struggles of the bullpen again, he called a meeting and basically told his players in so many words, look, you're not out of it yet. Wash this one off. Go home. And I don't know if it was the ugliness of the defeat or the fact that, you know, they're now only one game from elimination or maybe the way that, you know, last night ended with CC Sabathia with that injury, a player everybody respects. But it jumped out to me that Aaron would choose that moment to talk to his players. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of an now or never moment. I mean, they're, you know, whatever cliche you want to use, backs against the wall. They're, you know, they're right up against it now. But as you know as well as I do, Aaron is a relentlessly upbeat person. I mean, without fail. He will always find the positive in a situation. He will always believe in people. And he's one of these people who, when he's in a room, and we know this from when we worked with him, you know, some people suck the energy out of a room. Some people give energy to a room. Aaron gives energy to the people around him. And I think it was probably an astute time for him to say what he did. And I'm sure he didn't tear a strip off them. As you said,
no.
He said, you know, wash it off, move on, and you're not out of this yet. And listen, it's not like they're getting beaten by a bad team or an inferior team. The Astros are great. And not only are they great, they're playing better right now than the Yankees are too. Aaron's a very extremely competitive person. But he, you know, he will balance that with the need to lift people up and to be positive and that sort of thing. And he's gotten them around further than they got last year. And they're playing a great team. So it's going to take a lot for them to come back and win three in a row, though, against the Astros.
Yeah, there have been 86 series in which a team has taken a 3-1 lead in the baseball postseason. And 73 of those, that team has wind up finishing it off. And look, if Justin Verlander finishes it off tonight or they finish it off on Saturday or Sunday in Game 6 or 7, I think the moments I'm going to remember the most in this series are after Games 2 and 3, being in the Yankees clubhouse, and just hearing the voices of guys like Aaron Judge and Brett Gardner and Aaron Hicks, where you just got the sense that they knew then, like, man, we had him. Like, we had a chance to beat Verlander in Game 2. Man, we had opportunities against Gerrit Cole, because that offense just in those big spots, you know, against the Astros just hasn't come through.
Yeah, and I think going into the playoffs, if you looked at the regular season numbers, both offenses looked extraordinary. I mean, put up huge numbers. But I don't know about you. I think there was a feeling that of the two teams, the Yankees were a little bit more susceptible to plus pitching, plus velocity, which is what Cole's bringing and what Verlander's bringing a lot. That there are some more holes in some of the Yankee swings than there are in the Astros swings. The Astros walked more. They struck out less. The Yankees are still a great offensive team, but, you know, look what they did against Baltimore. They demolished weak pitching this year. And they had their chances against Cole. They left men on. They had their chances in Game 2. Even last night, early in the game, they loaded the bases in the first. They get one run on a walk, and then they leave the bases loaded. They left the bases loaded later on in the game as well. And some of the guys, like Brett Gardner, doesn't look like himself. Edwin Encarnacion does not look like himself. Like, these are proven veteran guys. Both of those guys are in their mid-30s, and, you know, Gardner's chasing all kinds of pitches. Encarnacion is missing hittable pitches, like missing pitches that he normally destroys. And everything's magnified in a short series. The pressure is on. You know, and I'm curious what kind of a lineup that Aaron brings into Game 5. Are there no changes, significant changes? Who knows? But, you know, right now you can see that the guys are pressing because they need somebody to come through with a big hit like Springer and Correa did last night.
And you mentioned the lineup. Boy, when I saw the Yankees lineup yesterday, the phrase that popped into my head was desperate times, desperate measures, because you're looking at Aaron Hicks in the number three hole. Aaron Hicks's last hit going into that game last night hadn't occurred in 82 days back in July, and yet he was in the number five spot because he had five competitive plate appearances in games two and three, which spoke to, you know, the struggles of some of the guys that you're talking about. And look, as we move forward, too, you get the feeling when you hear fans, you know, to go on social media about Giancarlo Stanton, and boy, it'd be great to get him back. He's not this perfect elixir for the Yankees, Dan.
No. So a couple of things on Aaron Hicks, and it was the first question I asked Aaron Boone when we were in the office before the game. First of all, he loves Hicks, as you know. He really thinks he's a big-time player, and he plays well in big spots. And Hicks actually had a base hit and walked twice last night. So he actually did his job. But in every game, Aaron Boone has split up his lefties as much as you can split them up, 3-6-9 or 2-5-8, depending on what the game was. So and I said to him, are you, like, is that where you start? Are you really trying to spread your lefties out as much as possible to make it a little more difficult on A.J. Hinch? And he said yes, like he admitted it. So if he doesn't have Hicks third, he probably has Torres third. I don't know if he hits Hicks fourth. So he probably hits Encarnacion fourth. Who knows? But he doesn't want his lefties like 5-6-9 or 5-7-9. He doesn't want them bunched together too much. So that's one of the reasons why Hicks is hitting third. In terms of Stanton, you're right. It is a dilemma because who knows how healthy he is. If he can play, he probably only DHs. So then do you sit Encarnacion, who hasn't looked good, but he's a proven player himself? If you put Encarnacion at first, you weaken your defense there. And by moving LeMahieu to third and taking Urshela out, if that's the next move, you weaken your defense there. So is it worth it to put a guy in Stanton who's not 100% and might have trouble with Verlander's velocity back in the lineup to weaken yourselves at both corner positions? I don't know. That's a lot of moving parts. I guess it's a good problem to have when you got 10 good players and only 9 spots. But this is not the way I think that Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone, you know, drew it up in their minds when they looked at the possibilities that presented themselves in October.
All right. On the Astros side last night, George Springer gets the big hit for them again, something he's done throughout his postseason career. 13 postseason home runs now. And I thought back, and I told this story on air last night, how before Game 7 of the 2017 World Series, they walked up to him. He was the DJ. It was his music. I think it was 80s music, if I remember correctly. And he just had the biggest grin on his face. And I asked him, how you feeling about, you know, going into Game 7? And he just went on this ramble about how much he loved the experience. Like, man, I'm having a blast. This is awesome. Whatever happens, I'm good. Because this is such a great thing. And I can't remember ever talking to a player before a winner-take-all game that loose and that excited about his experience. And he doubles in his first at-bat. He hits a home run in his second at-bat. And last night, even after the game, he really does seem like a 10-year-old kid who's in Williamsport, Dan. What are you seeing in him?
It's fun to watch. And we talked about energy a little bit earlier, and he gives off a tremendous amount of positive energy. And when I think of all the teams and all the stuff they do in dugouts now after home runs or big hits or whatever, to me it goes, the Astros were kind of the ones in my mind that kind of started it. You know, Springer has fun. Correa has fun. We all know Bregman has fun. You know, how many people, maybe Jock Peterson's the only guy in baseball who likes hitting home runs more than Alex Bregman does. When he comes back to the dugout, look how much fun that he has. Like, the vibe in this group is great. You know, they got some young guys, some older guys, but they've got a lot of big personalities in that room, and it all seems to blend together beautifully. And you know, one thing we know, the Astros were never going to be intimidated by playing at Yankee Stadium. Like, they've done this before. They've won a World Series. They've beaten the Yankees. They've done everything that they're being asked to do right now. And last night, they just, in key moments with a couple of men on, got huge hits. You know, Springer with one, and the Correa one just, in effect, ended the game. That made it 6-1, and it felt like 60-1 as soon as Correa hit that home run. And they're, you know, they've got a great positive energy about them, and they're also tremendously talented. Like, we shouldn't sell them short. Their lineup is every bit as good as the Yankees. Their starting pitching is better. And to me, the one part of the team that never gets talked about is the bullpen, which is really good. And you know, the Yankees bullpen is great and gets a lot of attention. But you look at what guy, you know, just Harrison Osuna, for example, at the end of the pen, how good they are, and the other options A.J. Hinch has in front of them. This, I felt coming into the playoffs, this is the most complete team in baseball. If you go looking for weaknesses, you have to look harder on the Astros than you do on any other team that was going into the playoffs.
And you know that with relievers, there's a volatility to it. You know, one outing can get a guy back on track. And I thought of that last night with Ryan Pressly, where he's had some ups and downs. And as Ryan Pressly's in the game and trying to get through that fifth inning, A.J. Hinch has got Josh James warming up in the bullpen. So he had a lever he could have pulled, but he stuck with Ryan Pressly. Pressly finishes that inning, leaves the mound with a big shout, and now maybe moving forward, A.J.'s got another weapon at his disposal. You and I have seen a lot of 3-1 deficits in our time covering baseball. I don't know if I've seen one as big as the one that's in front of the Yankees now. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Verlander in Game 5, fully rested. Cole, if necessary, in Game 7, fully rested. Two out of the three games in Houston. Momentum with the Astros. Paxton only went 2 1/3. You're right. It feels, you never want to say never, but it feels like an enormous mountain to climb. Because for the Yankees to win 3 in a row, firstly, how do they just, even if they're, if they have the lead in all three, how do they have enough bullpen arms to navigate their way through all those innings? You know, what they need is a deep outing by Paxton, and the offense has to come to light. Like, they need a blowout win or two so that Aaron Boone doesn't have to use his key guys 3 days in a row, more than three outs at a time. It seems like the longest of long shots. I mean, as you say, in baseball, we never say never because we can make a fool of ourselves pretty quickly. But it's not like the Astros are a fluky team who happened to be up 3-1 on a team that's much better than them. Again, the Astros are great, and they know how to put away people. They've got a Hall of Famer on the mound in Game 5. Everybody in A.J. Hinch's bullpen is fairly rested. Nobody threw a ton of pitches last night. They can all come out again. And like, it wouldn't surprise me if George Springer hit the first pitch of the game out of the ballpark tonight. Like, they just have that moment about them, that way of stepping into the big moment. And you know their confidence is sky high right now.
When CeCe Sabathia threw his pitch last night, he told teammates on the field right after that he felt his shoulder pop. And, of course, he tried to throw a warm-up pitch and felt enormous pain and said to his teammates, "I'm done," and he walked off. Dan, you may have called the last pitch of a Hall of Fame career. What were you feeling as you saw that?
I was feeling sadness for him, you know, and regardless of whether he stayed out there and gave up another couple of runs, it didn't matter. Like, he just deserved to be able to walk off the field on his own without an injury, on his terms, quote unquote. And we all know he's not nearly the pitcher he used to be, but I'm sure you agree with me. He's been, you know, one of our favorites to cover for many, many years. A big teddy bear of a guy, a wonderful person, a guy who overcame, you know, issues in his personal life, a guy who's given back to the community, a guy who's been a tremendous teammate, and a guy who's put up Hall of Fame numbers. Like, he checks every box in my mind. And I thought it was one of the sadder things that I've seen in baseball. Again, the score, the situation, none of that mattered. It was just how unfortunate for him that he wasn't able to get a third out, get a last out somehow, and then just walk off the field, get the baseball, tip his cap, that sort of thing. Because you know he would have done that. And he was obviously in pain when he walked off with Steve Donahue, and you could see the emotion welling up inside him. And I was sad for him. You know, he deserved a better finish than that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you saw the claps from Garrett Cole. You saw the claps from George Springer. There was an enormous reaction on social media, and you made reference to it. In my time covering baseball, I never saw a better teammate. Like, everybody loved CC and respected the fact that, you know, he would draw in teammates from all corners of the clubhouse. And I think, you know, for as great a pitcher as he was, that may turn out to be the legacy that a lot of his former teammates will remember.
Even for the brief time he was in Milwaukee, right? How many guys are in a spot for 2 months and leave a lasting legacy too?
Yeah, 100%. I will see you at the ballpark later.
All right, Buster. Looking forward to it.
After Game 4, Joe Girardi was on the MLB Network, and he was talking about CC Sabathia, someone that he managed for years. And it was an emotional moment for Joe.
That was not the way I wanted to see it end for him. CC, you're a Hall of Fame pitcher that was as tough as any man I was ever around. What you went through on a daily basis to just be able to get on the mound. You were a great husband. You were a great father. You were probably the greatest teammate I've ever been around because of your ability to pull all 25 and sometimes all 50 people together in a clubhouse. And you were the guy that I always wanted on the mound when we needed a win. And it was a privilege for me to manage you for 9 years. I love you, man.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravage.
And incredibly, the Rabbit Train might be parked this weekend. It's possible there will be no Major League Baseball this weekend if Justin Verlander and the Astros wrap up the American League Championship Series against the Yankees. Rabbit, that would be remarkable, but maybe a tribute to how well the Astros are playing, how well the Nationals played for sure, and the struggles of the Yankees.
Yeah, I think we were sort of reminded two things last night, how complete the Astros are. I mean, we went into the series talking about the Yankee bullpen, the Astro bullpen. Last night, when you had Presley come in and Will Harris looked more formidable than the Yankees have looked in many days. The mistakes, the mental mistakes, the Sabathia walking off injured, that was sort of the culmination of a terrible night in the Bronx, which, you know, started perhaps with the very sad Yankee fans taunting Zach Greinke in the bullpen before the game started. It went from bad to worse, and at the most ill-afford time that the Yankees can play this way. It was a very, very frustrating series so far for Yankee fans, for sure, and you know, for people who know Aaron Boone, a lot of times fingers get pointed at Brian Cashman or Aaron Boone. This is squarely on a team and the players that won 100 games this year. It looked like they're playing as if they'd won 70.
Yeah, and you made reference to something that happened before the game, and it was interesting because I was sitting in the booth with Chris Singleton when Zach Greinke walked out to begin his warmups, and it felt like, as Singy said on the air last night, like there was a fight broke out or something, because all of a sudden there was this burst of jeers that went on out there. And look, every starting pitcher who goes out to warm up in an opposing ballpark, he hears something. But apparently there was a fan who was getting on Greinke about his social anxiety disorder in the past, which is more than a decade old, and some of the issues that he had then. When you hear stories like that, the first thing I think of, Carl, is, okay, there's one idiot in that group, or there are two idiots in that group, or whatever the number is. But it's sad. It's so sad. It's incomprehensible.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that's ever played there, and of course, we've sat with so many different people on our set and in our green room, and obviously, the Red Sox being the rival, they tend to get things hurled at them verbally that other teams don't. Curt Schilling talked about it all the time. Again, you know, the level of disrespect and lack of class when it gets to be such a personal assault versus booing, or rooting for your own side. The personal nature of it when you're talking about somebody who's dealing with that anxiety. And you're right, it may only speak to a few of the people there, but that doesn't matter. It's sort of a blanket. It's like when ESPN has certain people say things, then it falls under the ESPN umbrella. It's the same thing. It was brought up by Josh Reddick the night previous about disrespectful. Again, whether it's one or 100, it proved, unfortunately, to rear its head. And that's not a reflection of that, you know, that organization that they want. That part's very frustrating. It's like Philadelphia fans. There's a reputation. I got an idea. Don't live up to it. You know, prove you're better than it. And they didn't do that. At least one, two, a handful didn't do that last night. And that is, I think, sad is a good word for it. Frustrating is a good word for it. Depressing is another good word for it.
Yeah, and the Yankee fans turned on their own last night. Man, Gary Sanchez, the boos that he heard in his two plate appearances before he hit the home run, that was enormous. And Adam Ottavino, who has just struggled so badly in this postseason, such a key member of that bullpen. And, you know, Carl, watching this and how it played out, it feels like, to, you know, your initial point about how the Astros pitching staff is deeper than we thought, and maybe the Yankees aren't as deep as we thought. It feels like this Yankee series has really exposed – you know, the potential weakness of having that kind of bullpen strategy, because if one of the, you know, the runners in your relay team drops the baton, the whole thing can completely fall apart.
100%. You know, and again, you know, the rainout, you know, we could point to that and say, wow, they were going to play four games in a row, but this was not the game that was going to be impacted by that. You had a day off, and our discussion after game three heading into game four was, to your point, they're down a man, and whether they want to acknowledge it or not, they're down a man. And, you know, unfortunately, Adam Ottavino's slider has been terrible. And I was really surprised that's the direction they went in, but it shows the dependence on those four guys, and they're left with no option. You know, it's almost as if to suggest, look, we know you're 80%, but we need you. We know you're 50%. You've got to get in there. And that part of it really stung them. And, you know, the other part of last night, which was different, was the domination of Tanaka in game one versus the performance of Tanaka in game four. And people will say he made one mistake to George Springer, but the truth was he made several mistakes that inning. He walked a man, he gave up a hit, then he gave up a three-run home run. You know, I think what we try to do on our show, and I think that, you know, you've been around us long enough to appreciate, it's not the home run that is the story. It's what led up to the home run. The story is the home run plus. And a lot of times people tend to forget the plus, and they'll say, I can't believe he allowed Springer to hit a homer. Well, he allowed the walk, he allowed the hit, which allowed the three-run home run. So there was just an overall dullness to the Yankees. They weren't sharp, they weren't crisp, they weren't clean. You could certainly hear the frustration in Aaron Boone. We got to flush this. The guys are good enough to do that. We're going to fight. But they are severely handicapped when you don't have Ottavino. You're going into a game with a guy that has given you two or three innings now every start. And, you know, the way that this team has operated, you're watching the game, it gets to the second or third inning, the starter is struggling, or he's just not as sharp as he usually is, and the television production takes a shot of Aaron Boone, you see his face, shot of the bullpen, and somebody's warming up, and you're in the third inning, and it's here we go again. And I know, you know, if I'm a Yankee fan, and we've won 100-plus games using that formula, basically starting in the sixth inning, not in the third inning, well, wow, we're dipping into a well that's running real dry, and it becomes real old when you know your starting pitcher is not going to be trusted to give you six or seven innings. It's not even a question of even if they could. It just feels like we're pulling the ripcord in the third or fourth inning no matter what.
Yeah, and it'll be fascinating to see how long he tries to ride Paxton tonight because of the issues that have popped up in the bullpen. And you and I know that there's a hyper-focus on the managers in the postseason. You know, we saw it last week with Dave Roberts. You know, in past years, we've seen managers, you know, viewed as geniuses, make one move, and all of a sudden, they're the worst manager ever. I will say that, you know, next spring, when I'm around Aaron Boone, there are two things I was going to ask him about, and I'm curious to see if you have the same reaction. One, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, about Adam Ottavino and continuing to rely on him. But not only that, matching him up against the same guys. Because I've been around teams, the Astros are one of them, where they say, you know, it's one thing to use a reliever, but maybe it's better to mix up the matchups from game to game so the hitters don't get repeated looks. And the other thing, too, and this has happened a couple of times in the Yankees postseason, this whole thing about having a reliever warm up repeatedly. And that happened with Chad Green last night, where he was warming up in the third inning and then the fourth inning, and he was up in the fifth inning. And I always think back to the words, and I'm sure you heard them, from Buck Showalter, who would always say, when you get up a reliever one time, you know, that the reliever will tell you that's when they have absolute full adrenaline. Second time, you know, it's okay. Third, fourth time, by that point, there's a lot of the energy has gone out of their arm. And Chad Green comes into the game after having warmed up, I think, in four different innings, and he gives up a home run right away. That would be one of my questions for Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I hate to micromanage or think about what the manager is thinking about. I always defer to the manager. You know your team better than anybody else. But, I mean, in this case, it does feel like, as an observer, that this has been a reaction to last year, in which they were criticized for not going to the bullpen late, And this season, they relied on the bullpen, and that is sort of a headstrong determination in this postseason. We are going to win or lose with our bullpen. They won us 100. We're better than everybody else. And, you know, in the end, to me, this only enriches the concept of Gerrit Cole being a Yankee next year, or some starting pitcher that can give you 7 or 8 innings. We tend to be reminded of it every year, that in the end, here are the Nationals, and they rely on 3 great starting pitchers. In the end, here are going to be the Astros, and they rely on 3 really, really good starting pitchers. The Red Sox had some starting depth. Clearly, Eovaldi was a star last year. The Dodgers had really good starting pitching. This isn't flipping the script from analytics and sabermetrics. It's just a reminder that when you have Schilling and Randy Johnson, you have a much greater chance to go deep in the playoffs than you do if you have, you know, one reliable starter. They're going to need to add to, and maybe the Severino injury is ultimately the sort of postscript to the season, that his injury and his inability to be a solid number one starter in the postseason really hamstrung them and it killed them. And that may very well be, but maybe you now realize we have to add somebody like Gerrit Cole, Steven Strasburg to Luis Severino. We got to stay healthy, and then we can compete. But you can't compete against these really good starting pitchers that are then followed by a really good bullpen if you only have a really good bullpen. You can't do it.
And the Yankees also going into next year will be looking to find a replacement. I don't know how to do it for CC Sabathia, whose career came to an end last night. What I heard Booney heard in the clubhouse afterward was that when the teammates went to the mound, he told them that his shoulder popped, and he wanted to throw that one warm-up pitch to see if it was just some awkward feeling that would go away. But then he threw the warm-up, he felt the pain again, and he said, "I'm done." And listening to Zach Britton after the game talk about how difficult it was to see CC Sabathia in so much pain after the game, and they know what he went through to even pitch this year. Carl, what were your thoughts about CC Sabathia walking off the field for the last time as a player?
Well, seeing the clips of Joe Girardi basically breaking down and crying, I think we've gotten to know him not like a teammate, but we certainly have gotten to know him over the years. I think the thing that probably people who aren't his teammate don't recognize is that tenacious bulldog mentality that he had, which was on display last night. And he was clearly not the guy that he was when he was winning a Cy Young or even in recent years. And yet his idea was, of course, you need me, I'm going out there. My knee is killing me, and I'm still going to go out there. That's what a teammate does. And I think you're reminded of it last night in the postgame comments and the reactions from his former manager and from his current teammates that you're losing sort of an old school warrior, and that's a sad way for him to go out. But I personally won't sit there when somebody says, "Please, describe CC Sabathia or what you remember." The only thing that I would remember from last night, if it even came up in my memory and my recalling of Sabathia, was he went out there, he got hurt, and he tried like hell to stay on the mound. That would be the extent of my memory of last night. There's way, way much more than that about CC Sabathia that I would remember, let alone his incredibly gregarious smile and his personality to go along with his ability to pitch. I mean, we had the conversation in the green room last night. Is he a Hall of Famer? And, to me, he's a borderline. He's borderline. There were most of the people said he's a Hall of Famer with his, 261 wins, Cy Young, All-Star, 3,000 strikeouts. I would have no problem. And perhaps it is his personality and his relationship with his teammates and his media members that do ultimately cast a yes vote for him. He's a Hall of Fame person. He certainly had Hall of Fame years as a pitcher. And it was unfortunate that it ended that way, but that's far from what I would remember about him, the way it ended.
Yeah, 100%. And it'll be great that moving forward, we're going to be able to work alongside him in ESPN.
Right.
He's already got a deal locked up with us. All right. I appreciate it, Carl. Thanks for doing this.
Talk to you soon. See you, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Rena Wong is a Twins fan who is known on Twitter as Rena Benina, and every Friday she helps us out with the Bleacher Tweets. And Rena, have you been able to bring yourself to watch the American League Championship Series, knowing that the Yankees beat your Twins and you potentially could see an American League champion crowned tonight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been watching actually every single game, kind of been planning my nights around it. And, you know, there's a little tiny, tiny part of me who enjoys rooting for both teams and watching a good series, but a really big part of me that's also kind of enjoying watching the Astros steamroll the Yankees the same way that they steamrolled us.
There you go. Payback, right? Payback exactly. For the Astros, you know, on behalf of your Twins. All right, let's get to this week's Bleacher Tweets.
Sounds good. Jumping right in, we've got RP at Raphael Pern. Buster, what's the maximum amount of Hall of Fame starters playing in a single World Series? He's been thinking about the possible Nats Astros with Verlander, Greinke, and Scherzer already Hall of Famers, and Strasburg and Cole could potentially reach it.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about yesterday about Hall of Famers in one particular series or one particular a matchup, and we were talking about 2001 because, of course, you had Curt Schilling and you had Randy Johnson, and Schill is not a Hall of Famer yet, but at some point I think he's going to be. On the other side, you had Mariano Rivera working out of the Yankees bullpen. Roger Clemens, of course, is Hall of Fame caliber, no question about it. You think back to, you know, some of the early World Series when, you had the New York Giants and the Philadelphia Athletics. Those teams were filled with Hall of Famers, but no doubt about it. You know, you could see Justin Verlander. You are going to see Justin Verlander in Hall of Fame. Zach Greinke, I think, might even have a better case than CC Sabathia. Max Scherzer would already be in. Strasburg has a chance if he has more extended success. And the same thing with Gerrit Cole. And here's something else, Rainey. I was thinking about this. Jose Altuve, I think, is on a Hall of Fame track. George Springer, with his postseason record. And Juan Soto certainly looks like a guy who is capable of putting together a Hall of Fame career. So a lot of greatness potentially in an Astros and Nationals World Series.
Absolutely. It'll be an absolute star-studded event. Next, we've got David at Baseball Fan 1918. Why does it seem that the Padres' open manager's job doesn't get as much love as the Phillies, Mets, and Cubs? There's a lot of young talent with six of the top 100 on the MLB prospect list, and Machado was one of the biggest free agent signees last year, and on top of that, it's San Diego.
It's San Diego, and I can speak to that. I lived there for 4 years, a great place to live. And I actually had one of the managerial candidates, the guy who's being talked about this fall, say to me, boy, that Padre job could be really interesting. I think part of the reason, though, that there might be some concern is that they don't seem like they're close in terms of putting together a championship-caliber pitching staff. And let's keep in mind, you know, the Dodgers are absolutely a dominant force in that division that's not going away anytime soon. And then there, of course, is the question about how much money are they willing to pay? Are they willing to, you know, give a contract like Joe Maddon just got with the Angels, $12 to $15 million, according to our Jesse Rogers?
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But to add a little color to that, do you expect them to pick someone who's a little more experienced? Like, I guess you had mentioned with the Mets, the Girardi or the Perez, the guy who's new and has something exciting to offer.
I would guess that. Much in the way that I would guess that the Mets would pick an experienced guy or the Phillies would pick an experienced guy, because the guy that, you know, those teams are moving on from didn't have experience. Andy Green, who was the Padres manager, just got let go after 4 years. He didn't have any experience. And so you would think that would be a priority for ownership, but I don't know if that's necessarily the case, because some of the guys that they're talking to don't have that managerial experience. Ron Washington obviously does.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. Next, we've got Jeremy T. at Jeremy Tiermini. If Joe Girardi eventually becomes the manager of the Mets, would that increase the likelihood of an off-season Mets and Yankees trade because of Girardi's familiarity with the Yankees' young players and farm system?
No, Jeremy. I mean, the reason why the Yankees and the Mets don't make trades now is because of Mets ownership. You remember a couple of years ago, the front offices arranged a deal of Jay Bruce going from the Mets to the Yankees. But it was ownership of the Mets that stepped in and killed it, and they wound up delivering Jay Bruce to the Indians. I think the Yankees front office is progressive enough where their feeling is, look, we'll trade with anybody. And on the other hand, I think Mets ownership doesn't like the specter of one of their guys going over to the Yankees and having success and having that play out right in front of them.
Right, definitely. Next, we've got P.K. Steinberg making a consecutive appearance at P.K. Steinberg. Corbin's been more or less a problematic starting pitcher, or at least to him, he seems inconsistent and makes him nervous. Could you see the Nats using him out of the bullpen and going with the Strasburg, Scherzer, and Sanchez rotation in the World Series?
Yeah, and PK, you know this, is that if you go back in baseball history, like when I was growing up and was a fan for the first time, it was common practice for the starter of game one to then line up and pitch game four and then come back and pitch game seven. You know, guys like Bob Gibson, Mickey Lolich, Tom Seaver, that happened all the time. That doesn't happen anymore. You don't see starters start three different games, so every team needs four guys, and Patrick Corbin is one of the Nationals' four guys. So sorry, you're going to have to remain nervous.
Yeah, and he's just been so versatile. I mean, he's eventually pitched every other game. But what I think is interesting is I'm pretty sure PK is a Phillies fan.
Maybe he takes the approach of adopting another team from his division because then he can feel better about his own team.
Exactly. And in the same division. So lastly, finishing it out, we've got Eric E. at Esoteric Eric Zero. Hey, Buster and Rena and Troy, what's been your favorite web jam so far of the MLB postseason?
And Rena, I'm going to defer to you on this one because, you know, I've been essentially locked into one series, one game, you know, covered the Twins and the Yankees and now doing the Astros and the Yankees. I'll let you pick one.
So the one that I'm going to pick, you should be slightly familiar with. This is a pretty easy choice for me, but Randy Dobnik just becoming a cult and internet phenomenon. I mean, not only did he have just the best coming up story of the entire postseason, he just has this signature look with his mustache and his huge goggles, and that's extremely memorable on the internet. Plus, on top of that, he had that nail-biter wedding like Justin Verlander did in 2017, and I know that the Uber thing was kind of used against him, but it is really uplifting and brought a lot of, you know, different pay disparities, you know, up. And so Randy Dobnik, easily the best web gem of the entire MLB postseason.
Yeah, and he no question, he's been a great story and a fun story. That 24 hours when he was a thing in the postseason was one of the coolest things that we've seen this October. All right, Raina, I hope you enjoy Game 5 and the Astros getting revenge on the Yankees on behalf of your Twins. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, and go Astros.
That's it for today. My thanks to Carl Ravitch, to Dan Shulman, to Rena Wong, and to Troy Farkas. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.